to Perspectives on Public Interest. I'm Emily Brennan, and here's your pro bono news update. It's National Pro Bono Week. The ABA Standing Committee on Pro Bono and Public Service is encouraging lawyers throughout the nation to think strategically about local legal needs and take the next step in providing access to justice for poor and vulnerable people. You can see snapshots of National Pro Bono Week around the country by looking up hashtag CelebrateProBono. The Legal Services Corporation recently honored the New Mexico's 9th Judicial District Court Pro Bono Committee for its efforts in providing important legal services to residents in eastern New Mexico, including an Ask a Lawyer event that has helped nearly 400 low-income people receive free legal consultations. You can read more at lsc.gov. Human Rights First will be welcoming its newest Chubb Rule of Law Fellow from Penn Law. Natasha Arnpriester, who graduated in 2016, is a longtime advocate for refugee rights. She will begin her fellowship at Human Rights First in January, working in the group's International Refugee Protection Division, focusing on refugee advocacy and refugee law within the international context. Read more at law.upenn.edu. That's it for the update. Here's our interview with Craig Harwood, Director of the Paul and Daisy Soros Fellowships for New Americans.
Hi, welcome to the Perspectives on Public Interest podcast. My name is Akbar Hussain. I am a 2L at Penn Law. So we are here with Dr. Craig Harwood. He is the director of the Paul and Daisy Soros Fellowship Foundation. Welcome, Craig.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. So Craig, can you please share with our listeners a little about the Paul and Daisy Soros Fellowship for New Americans? How did it come about, its missions, its goals?
Great, absolutely. Well, so the Paul and Daisy Soros Fellowships for New Americans, it honors America's immigrant tradition. Mm-hmm. Paul and Daisy Soros were immigrants from Hungary who escaped Nazism, escaped communism, and they found their way here to the United States. Early on in his time here, Paul Soros wanted to attend graduate school in engineering. He applied to the best schools in the country, and he was accepted to the best schools in the country, but he actually couldn't afford to pay for most of the schools that he was accepted to. Fortunately, a friend pointed him in the direction of Polytechnic Institute in Brooklyn, and the courses there were a little bit cheaper. He was able to go to graduate school, but it was a really difficult time for him financially. And he commented that, you know, if somebody had just given him a little bit of support during those years, it would have been so much easier for him to focus on his studies and excel. Well, after he got out of graduate school, Paul Soros had a spectacular career designing systems for loading and unloading cargo from ships. And he actually had the sort of came up with the world standard in this, became the leading firm in this kind of design for loading and unloading cargo. You know, one thing that I find particularly, you know, just remarkable about Paul Soros and the Soros family in general is that at the same time that George Soros, the younger brother, who is probably the more well-known Soros, has a world-class career in finance, Paul Soros is having a world-class career in engineering and in entrepreneurship because it was really, you know, his own business that he was running there. Later in life, Paul Soros invested with his brother George and financially did very well. And Paul and his wife Daisy became philanthropists, supporting causes such as education and healthcare and the arts. But 18 years ago, they decided they wanted to come up with a program that really meant something to them personally and really acknowledged their own experience as immigrants and really helped other people gain that tool that was so important in helping Paul in his career, and that was getting a graduate education. So they came up with this particular fellowship, the Paul and Daisy Soros Fellowships for New Americans, which supports 30 remarkable immigrants and children of immigrants every year by providing financial support for graduate school.
Wow. So in terms of, there are a lot of listeners who are thinking about applying to the fellowship. So what should prospective candidates think about as they're applying? What kind of people are you actually looking for?
Well, we're really looking for 30 remarkable individuals who are going to make significant contributions to society. You know, we're really open-minded in what kind of contributions they make. It can be to society, it can be to culture, it can be to their field. We are looking for a really broad base of individuals. And so we're not looking for any one specific field. We value fellows who are, doing public interest law like yourself, but we value fellows who are in any area of law or in medicine or biomedical research, people who are in business, in the arts. We're open-minded and enthusiastic about getting a strong group of applicants from a wide variety of fields.
So I recognize that there's a website in which the fellows can go to look for the various ways that they can apply, but there are also some other resources that the Soros Foundation provides. Could you tell us a little bit about that in terms of the webinars?
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, I would direct people probably first and foremost to our website because that's sort of the access point for all the different resources. If you want to apply for the fellowship, you can start an application right on our website, pdsoros.org. But as you mentioned, there are some other resources that are available there. But perhaps the most helpful one is that we run webinars, info sessions, about one a week, sometimes a little bit more. And these info sessions are comprehensive. We take the time to go over the history and the background of the fellowship, and what we're looking for, our selection process, the requirements of the application itself. And then we provide time for you to ask questions. So it's really a great way to get to know the fellowship and the application process. We've been doing a series of articles. We updated our website about a year ago, and all of a sudden we have the ability to write our own content and post stories. And we're excited about that because it allows us to bring to life some of the incredible work of the fellows. So we think one of the resources is actually just knowing about what our fellows do. If you want to join the fellowship community, one of the ways to start is to learn about the fellows. But we've also been creating some new articles that we think will be helpful to potential applicants. We just put up a new article in which you're actually featured that talks about recommendations, letters of recommendation, and how did the most recent class of fellows go about selecting recommenders? What was the thought process in putting together their group of recommenders? And we'll be doing more of these kind of articles that are meant to be sort of helpful tips on how you can create a strong application.
Wow, so that was incredibly helpful. Thank you so much. So as I understand, you joined the foundation relatively recently. So what surprises you the most about the foundation, its fellows, and where do you think the foundation's headed in the next, 5 to 10 years?
Great. Thanks. It has been incredibly satisfying and rewarding 3 years with the fellowship. And I knew how successful and how high achieving the fellows were from the get-go. So I guess in one way that wasn't a surprise, but just to really see the incredible contributions the fellows are making to such a wide variety of fields is it's outstanding. I think something else that I've really come to appreciate is just how tight-knit the community is. When Paul and Daisy started the fellowship 18 years ago, they really thought of it as a funding source. But they did want to create a fellowship that had a personal connection, that they knew the fellows and that the fellows all knew one another. There were a lot of resources put into building the fellowship community. One is the fact that we visit all of our fellows on their home campuses, which is why I'm here right now visiting with you. We also bring all of the fellows in for a fall conference in the first 2 years when they're receiving their funding, and it really helps the cohort grow and build as a class. These early seeds we sow in developing the community last, and the fellowship is thriving in terms of its fellowship community. And we have fellows that are extremely active all the way from the first year of the fellowship through today. And so I think that fellowship community is really something that's very special to the fellowship, probably because there is something that ties everybody together. Even though the fellows are so different in their fields and in their immigrant histories and their family backgrounds, but the one thing that ties them all together is being a new American, being an immigrant or the child of immigrants, and that really builds a very close connection amongst the fellows.
So you had mentioned you've been traveling over the past few weeks. Now you're here at Penn and you'll continue to travel. What's the purpose of the visit? And also, what are some of the takeaways are you getting out of these visits.
Great. Well, you know, I think, as I mentioned, I do think that Paul and Daisy were very wise in creating a fellowship that extended beyond funding and trying to create a personal connection with the fellows and the fellowship program. So part of my going around and also the deputy director, Julian, visits some of the fellows, is that we are able to really start to develop a personal relationship between the fellows and the program itself and get to know not just the fellows, but even their mentors. What are the support systems that they have at their universities? And how can we partner to help them succeed? I think it's also important for us to meet with programs. We build relationships with programs, and it's important for us to have support on the ground at the universities who are helping to look out for great students and send them our way. We also learn a lot about what the current trends are in education. You know, what are the new programs that are going on? What's really working at different universities? Where are some of the directions that the different universities are heading? So we can really keep our ear to the ground and be part of sort of the forward motion in education.
So it seems like running a foundation itself is challenging, and there's a lot of web of responsibilities that you take on from a managerial perspective. Yeah, what does working for the Soros Foundation look like on the ground?
The most exciting part of working for the Soros Foundation is working with incredible people. I mean, having the connection with the fellows is really where this is all about. Being able to visit with you, but having people come back year after year and join us at fall conferences or for dinners we hold around the country or for alumni events when we have speakers come in into town. I have fellows contact me almost every day asking for some connection to another fellow or an idea. Somebody says, oh, I'm working on this organization. I'm wondering if you have any ideas about somebody who could, that could help me with this, within the fellowship. So just the ability to connect fellows and bring fellows together. I'll also say just on a personal level, it's fun being part of a small organization. We get to wear a lot of hats and from creating a new website to putting out a newsletter to running a fall conference. So on a personal level, I also find it to be quite satisfying to wear so many hats in the organization.
That's fantastic. So switching gears a little bit. So there's been a lot of rhetoric around immigration in the most recent presidential election. How do you see the foundation contributing to that dialogue since it is at the center of those discussions? In your view, how have the fellows themselves shaped the immigrant narrative as it's being discussed in the media today?
Great question. Thank you. Yeah, there has been so much negative talk about immigration lately. But it does seem like we're at a very important point for this fellowship. Myself growing up, I remember hearing stories of my own family's immigration from Eastern Europe and hearing in school about the immigrants who built our nation. And I always grew up thinking of our country as a country of immigrants, of a melting pot where people came together from all over the world and built this country. So I've always valued the concept that we are here to support one another wherever we're from and build this place together. I think the goal of the fellowship is to really help fellows to achieve their goals, and those goals are so often intertwined with making contributions to society. And we would like to further enable you and all the other fellows to achieve your goals. We want to help you along your path. I think a secondary goal that we have once once you're doing your good work is for us to spread the word of those of your achievements and your contributions, both so we can serve as a source of inspiration for other people out there, for other new Americans, but really for wider society to see that the incredible work that new Americans are doing to improve this country. And so by working with news outlets, by writing our own stories, by using social media, by just doing our best to spread the news of your incredible accomplishments, we think that we're contributing to the discussion on immigration in a really profound and important way.
Absolutely. So it seems like many of the fellows, almost all of the fellows, achieve incredible success in their careers. Could you share with us and the audience, you know, some of the contributions that new Americans who have received the fellowship made and are continually changing our society today?
Well, there are just so many incredible fellows in our program who are doing such important work. You know, some that come to mind, Vivek Murthy is the current U.S. Surgeon General. He was one of the fellows from our very first class. And first South Asian American to become a Surgeon General and one of the youngest Surgeon Generals in history. Pardis Sabeti at the Broad Institute at Harvard played such an important role in working on curing Ebola and in such a selfless way, but you know, working at the highest levels of science to work on this really deadly disease. But here at Penn, alone, we have lots of important fellows who are doing important work. Alice Chen Plotkin is an associate professor of neurology at the Perelman School of Medicine. She's doing groundbreaking research on neurodegenerative diseases. Sophia Jan is on faculty at the Policy Lab at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. She's working to improve support for children with special health care needs. There's Raj Shah, who graduated from the Woodrow Wilson School and then earned an MBA from Wharton, who's managing director of the Department of Defense's Silicon Valley Innovation Lab. So really, we have just, you know, we have fellows all over the world and also fellows that, you know, are deeply connected with UPenn that you really are making incredibly important contributions to society.
Well, Craig, thanks so much for sharing all of your thoughts on the fellowship and for coming here and, you know, spending time with us. Really appreciate all of the work that you're doing and in advancing the immigrant narrative.
Great. Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure being here. And thanks to you. And congratulations. Welcome to our fellowship.
Thanks so much.
This podcast was produced by the University of Pennsylvania Law School. Learn more about public interest lawyering at law.upenn.edu/public service. Thanks for joining us.